Hello, friends, and welcome to another episode of Get Wrecked, our side series here on Play Along Podcast. My name is Ben. If you don't know what we do in this series, ourselves and a guest swap game recommendations, play as much as we can, and then basically get together and have a little chit chat. And I really want to get right into today's episode because it's going to be a doozy. I am joined today by Rick of Pixel Project Radio. How are you, Nick? No, did I say Nick? I meant Rick.
You're in the Christmas spirit. You were thinking of Saint Nick.
I am, apparently so, which is weird because I'm not a Christmas person, but apologies.
Rick, that's okay.
Of Pixel Project Radio, how are you?
I'm good, man. I'm really good. Thank you for inviting me on the show. I was really excited to do this with you, in part because of the games that we're talking about today, and in part, too, because we recorded previously on your show an episode on Shadow of the Colossus, and I had a great time talking with all of you, and I've been really eager to come back and work more with you guys, so this is a delight. I'm really excited.
Do you know, if you're going to come in and do our plugs for us, then I'm more than happy to have you on every time. But no, that was actually, it was a great episode, and I have to say I was pleasantly surprised by Shadow of the Colossus. It was a great experience, so go and listen to that if you guys haven't. But if people don't know anything about Pixel Project Radio, why don't you kind of give them the lowdown, let them know what they can expect and what it is that you guys do?
Sure. So Pixel Project Radio is my show. I host it roughly weekly, and I have a rotating cast of guests that come on to talk about games. I call us a video game discussions style podcast because we do a mix of generalized discussion and analysis on games. Sometimes we do topic episodes such as the music of Nobuo Uematsu, and at least once a month we do a deep dive, like true beat by beat analysis of a story. For example, this latest month we are doing a three-parter of Lost Odyssey, the Xbox 360 JRPG, and just going through it beat by beat, talking about the story, analyzing the themes, and all of that. It's a lot of fun. I think there's something for everyone, to quote that no-name gaming review site, you know? Too much water, 7 out of 10. But yeah, I think there's a little bit something for everybody, for every taste. And if you want to check us out, you can find us on every platform that you get your podcasts, as far as I'm aware. So yeah, we'd love to have you.
Yeah. And I mean, I'll have everything in the show notes as well, so people can just click straight through. But I wanted to do, I'm slacking on my podcast catch ups at the moment. My job I'm at, I work in an office, so I don't really get to wear headphones. So all of the previous podcast listening time I had is now gone. But today I wanted to make sure that I was like brushed up. I was listening to your episode on The Quarry.
Oh yeah.
Because I was like kind of looking through and I was like, what's catching my, and I saw The Quarry and I was like, oh, do you know what, that'll be interesting, because I find it's like a really polarizing game, especially when people compare it to Until Dawn. There's a lot of love for Until Dawn in people's hearts, so I was really interested to see. I'm blanking on the name of the guest that you had on. I'm apologizing.
That was Adam from The Good, the Bad, and the Backlog.
That's it. Yes. There was a good back and forth between you guys. I haven't finished the episode because it's a long one. It's about 3.5 hours, I think. But I got a fair chunk of the way through it.
Yeah. That one got away from us a little bit. There's just so much in that game where they go back and forth between scenarios for like 10 minutes at a time, you know? I mean, you guys did a whole series on it, right? You know?
Yeah, exactly. And it says so much back and forth, and like trying to break down the ways in which, like, I remember you was talking about like the bit in the beginning of the game where they like throw the character you're controlling his phone, and you can like choose to catch it or not catch it, and it seems really minuscule, but then later on something like that can like lead to a character death, and you're just like, oh, okay. But you do have that option to kind of just be like, do you know, well, what happens if I don't do this?
Yeah, it retains the strengths of Until Dawn in that way. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I won't lie to you, I did like Until Dawn more. I have a really big soft spot for that game. First game I ever platinumed, actually.
Oh, okay, that might be why.
I think it's just so well done. There's a lot in the Quarry that's objectively better. The story, I don't know. It's your mileage may vary, but that's one of the fun things with those games is just seeing a minuscule choice that just happens in the blink of an eye, and hours down the line, suddenly your character remembers it and, oh shit, now we're in trouble because of one little thing.
Yeah, and I mean, I will say, Adam was talking about the Until Dawn parties, and it was really interesting to hear that that wasn't really a thing that you was aware of, but like we had it over here. Like people like, but that and like the Telltale games as well, a lot of people like getting together and just kind of, especially like on Twitch streams, like having a Twitch chat, like kind of pick the option that was being chosen. Still to this day, I'm adamant that I will get enough people together that we can just sit and put the Quarry on movie mode and just pick all of the character personalities and just watch it all play out, because I'd love to see how that unfolds. And I feel like you could just get away with like kind of having like a little like cheesy 80s horror like movie night just by using the Quarry and the movie mode that they had,
and by adding that neat VHS filter that they give you.
Oh shit, yes they do, don't they? Yeah, you can properly lean into like the Friday the 13th stuff easily.
Yeah, that the playthrough that I just did, I did the VHS filter and I gave them the 80s clothes. So it was just like watching like being back as a kid in my bedroom with my VHS in my bedroom, watching exactly Friday the 13th part 2 or something.
Oh man. But I'm nervous because you know, the second game we're going to be talking about today, I'm nervous because I always get a bit funny whenever we bring that up. So what we're going to do is we're going to jump in. We're going to talk about the first game, which is what, Rick, you recommended to me, which was Pentiment.
Yes, I am so excited to talk about both of these games, but Pentiment was a game that I first played this year. Mm-hmm. And, you know, spoiler alert for folks who haven't read, you know, the lists of ours that are going around, the top tens of the year, et cetera, et cetera. Pentiment for me was my favorite game that I played in all of 2023. It knocked me away. It's amazing. Wow. I love it so much.
Interesting. Okay, so let's go into a bit about Pentiment before we go into the story of it. So it's a adventure role-playing video game, which I know Kai is just going to love that that's how that's described. developed by Obsidian Entertainment and published by Xbox Game Studio. It was released in November of 2022 for Windows, Xbox One, and the Xbox Series X and S. And before we get into like our history with it, the basic gist of it is that you are essentially playing as like an artist who's kind of traveling around and taking in the world and kind of using that to sway and kind of influence how he draws things and kind of how he makes his art. And you end up getting involved in murders and becoming like a detective or something. So what was it that drew you to this game, Rick? Like when you first kind of set eyes on it and you was like, this is what I'm going to play next, because I can imagine like me, you've got an extensive backlog. So what was it that made Pentiment stick out?
So it was a montage of things, a cornucopia of things that just jumped out at me as being very interesting. Games like this, narrative focused games, have always been what I am attracted to the most. It started as a kid playing Final Fantasy IX that just immediately hooked me. And I said, oh, stories in video games can be cool. It's not just Sonic and Mortal Kombat. I like those games a lot, but you know, there's more to video games than that. And a couple years ago, when I first got back into gaming, I kind of took a hiatus whenever I was in school. I played Disco Elysium in 2020 when it first came out. Had a profound effect on me in so many ways. It got me to start rethinking about games as an art rather than you know, games like Rocket League and Smash that you just play to have a good time. Not that you have a bad time with Disco Elysium. Some folks on other podcasts about main quests and stuff might argue.
But, yeah, I've heard that take going around. Yeah.
But it blew me away. It's my favorite game of all time. And when Pentiment was announced, they made explicit that this isn't a Disco Elysium alike, but that it was drawing some influence from there. And Josh Sawyer and his team on Obsidian, you know, they've most famously worked on Fallout New Vegas, which was a landmark, not just in the Fallout series, but with narrative-focused games and choice-based games as a whole. So that immediately stood out to me as, you know, something, a quality signifier, if you will. And the final thing is just the setting. I am not a, how to put this, I am not a Christian myself, personally, but I am extremely interested in religions of all kinds and stripes. I think it's an incredibly fascinating a man-made structure that we have all over the world, and it's endlessly fascinating to me. And this whole game was a passion project of Josh's, because he's super into this sort of historical period, and the game is meticulously researched. Everything in it is just lovingly crafted, and there are little winks and nods to things, even towards ancient music. I'm a musician myself, and a lot of our early music classes tie into religion and things like that. And you see a lot of that in this game as well, with the madrigals, the hours of prayer at the church, such as Nones, Vespers, things like that. And even one of the most important historical composers of all time, Hildegard von Bingen, is referenced in this game a few times. So it's just, it's taking every interest that I have from every area of my life and just putting it into a game and saying, and yeah, by the way, there's a murder mystery. So like, why wouldn't I want to play this? It's amazing. I was immediately hooked.
See, I feel really shallow now, because my investment in this game was was much shallower. I saw it get released. I wasn't following it or anything, so although it wasn't a shadow drop, it kind of shadow dropped to me. I was just like, oh, there's this game that everyone's talking about. And really, I kind of went off of people that I value the opinion of are talking highly of this game. And it's a pretty looking game made by Obsidian. And I don't know, people at home might not know, people at home won't be able to see, because we don't use a video, but I have a whole bunch of Fallout shit behind me. I've got like a Pip-Boy and a Super Sledge. I'm a massive Fallout fan, and New Vegas is easily my favorite of the series. So to hear that there was a new Obsidian game and that the art style was really cool to look at, and all of these people whose opinions I value were talking about it, I was like, well, but this just has to go on the backlog. And I'll get to this at some point, but it has to be on there. And now here we are. So let's talk about the art style first, because that's kind of like the first thing that drew me in. The easiest way to explain it, and I don't know if you've played this, but a previous game I played on a previous Get Wrecked was Gorogoa. Which is like the comic book style puzzle game. It's not, I say comic book, it's like four panels, and you kind of go through those panels and solve the puzzles that way. And Pentiment has a similar-ish style, in which you're kind of in a book and like the pages are turning every time you move to a new scene, and it's got a very cartoony Renaissance kind of art style to it. I don't know, how would you explain it? It's very hard to put into words.
Yeah, I think you did a pretty good job, man. It's period accurate art representation. A lot of folks will say a little misnomer and call this game like a medieval murder mystery. Technically not correct. This would be closer to the Renaissance period. Splitting hairs, but importantly so, because these characters are represented and depicted in a style that is of that era. So this is very much like the woodcuts and the art that you'd see out of the scriptorium workers from this time. It's very vivid, like you said, kind of storybook-like, cartoony. It really pops. And not for nothing, but it's a style that makes it look terrific on a big screen or on a handheld. My playthroughs of this have been on both a big screen and on my Steam Deck, and it looks so good on the Steam Deck, man. It looks great.
Yeah, I can imagine, because it doesn't really... Although, I don't know what it is as gamers, but I mean, me at least, I'm like, oh, big screen equals better. Like, you know, when I'm playing like a spectacle, I want a massive big screen and I want it to be as high res as I can. But that doesn't always translate down to those handheld consoles. But I can see something like this working, because it is just kind of very, where it's not an open world, it's like a side scrolling, like room style, like the old Zeldas used to be, where you kind of get to the edge and then it loads the next room. So I can see that working on a handheld, definitely. And just to set the more of the back scene, like this game is set in like the height of power of like the Roman Christian church, like the whole, like the church is the most powerful entity. Everyone veers the abbot and the abbey, and the church hold a lot of power in the land. And that's a topic that comes up a lot, at least in what I've played so far, because there's a lot of resentment from how do we say this, the lower, less fortunate people of the land compared to those who are living in the abbey.
Yeah. Minor correction. I hate to be the actually.
No, go
guy.
For it. Go for it, please.
The time period is more on the crest of the downfall of the church's supremacy. This particular Kirsa, this takes place in a fictionalized Bavarian town, and directly next door is the Kirsa Abbey. And this is they're kind of like a secular, not secular, that's completely wrong word, a sectioned off portion where they're a little bit behind the times. This particular abbey is still in business because of their scriptorium, but scriptoriums all around the world at this point, they're starting to fail. The church is slowly losing power, and this game takes place over the course of three different acts. And in the final act, the church does not have any power. We are moving into the technological revolution. That's not really the proper term, but you know what I mean. Like the printing press is now firmly established at that point.
We don't have Brothers of Christ hand scribing documents and stuff anymore.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. No, dude, I'm a big history fan, but if I'm wrong about something, I'm more than happy to be, well, actually it is kind of the wrong, but educated want of a better term. Okay, no, but that's interesting to know, because there was a lot of stuff that happened in the game where there's a baron who comes. That's kind of like the first act. And the baron ends up dying. And the whole worry is about the fact that he is essentially what's keeping the church alive. And I thought that was just relevant to this story. I thought that was kind of like the catalyst to get things going. I didn't realize that was a historically accurate part of the narrative.
It plays into it. I mean, he is their most wealthy patron, and without his patronage, they're not going to be able to keep the doors open. So his murder is problematic on a variety of levels, but that desire for funding is central to the motivations of some of the church members, and that's why some people are start to point fingers at some of the brothers. I don't want to spoil how the investigation goes, but all I'll say is this: you can't really spoil this first act. I mean, you can, but in a bigger sense, you can't. And it makes the murder mystery part really interesting, at least to me, because you've got these motivations from the church members, you've got motivations from the the townsfolks, because the baron at one of the dinners, he gets invited by the Father Abbot, says come to have dinner with us and the brothers. immediately when he sits down, the first thing he says is, hey, have you heard about these Martin Luther theses? I think they're just great. And you could tell everybody is like, what the fuck is this guy's problem? And it ends up in him getting kicked out. The father says, this is insane. You are our patron and we appreciate you very much, but you are undermining the church. You need to leave. So there's a motivation. As you're walking through town with the Baron, you can see other townsfolk know him and get upset at his arrival. Mm-hmm. He slept around. He's gotten into fights whenever he's been through before. He's a nobleman that abused his power at every turn, and now people are resenting him for coming back. So there are so many different angles of people pointing fingers at others. You never really know what's true and what's not. And that kind of ties into the grand theme of the game, or one of the themes that I find in this game, is this notion of what is right and what is wrong as it's told through history. Can there be such a thing? It's hard to say. And that's one of the things that I love about this game. It's just an examination of how time passes and how we as humans deliver information of the past and how it transmutates as it moves forward. I don't mean to talk so much, man. I just get so jazzed about this game. I love it.
And there's a little bit of that I've seen already. So we'll get into kind of how the story's played out a little bit and what we think of it so far. But there's a crossover where I heard a story in the church that was the story of something that happened in the area. I can't remember it off the top of my head. And then one of the locals tells the story, but it's the story of the saint, of the saint that is in the abbey. There's like a saint of the town.
Saint Moritz.
That's it. Thank you. And then there's like a local version where it's like, oh, this random person did this thing. And it's like, hang on, that's the exact same story as the story of St. Moritz. And so it's kind of like that, like you were saying, that like redressing of stories. And it's like, well, are they the same story? Or is one just like a crude bastardization of the other? Like, it's like a chicken egg situation. So it's really interesting to see.
Precisely so. And then you hear the same story retold as a Roman myth, and then again as a pagan myth. And you start to grapple and ask yourself, what is true? You know, this is a time before the internet, certainly, and before mass communication. Information was passed orally and through text. So now we're starting to see these discrepancies, and it's like, what is true? How are we going to document what really happened for our future generations?
Yeah, and it's interesting as well, because like, I mean, we could sit and talk about like the whole, like, you know, the pagans were there kind of quote unquote first, and then, you know, it's they have their stories, and then the Romans come in and kind of take bits of their stories and create Roman stories, and then the new kind of whoever comes in after the Romans, they take bits of that and the pagan and kind of make their own one. So it's really interesting to see this, like, and it's like a Chinese whispers kind of situation where everything gets like daisy chained up and you can see the different components of everything.
Yeah, it's really cool. And we should say too, if you're listening to this and especially listening to me, and you're thinking, who is this pompous jackass that Ben invited onto the show? why are they talking about games as like some historical drama and the essence of humanity? We should say too, the story itself is really entertaining. You don't have to look at this incredibly deeply to get a good time out of this. It's funny. It's surprisingly funny. Like, I laughed out loud at certain parts in this.
Well, it's interesting. So like the going into the gameplay, it works kind of in, you as you said, there's like these cycles where you kind of have set periods of the day where it's like, this is the time where we eat, this is the time where we work, and everything is very structured in that way. And so you play the part of Andreas, who is this, I get confused what exactly he kind of seems like. I mean, again, I'm not super like far into the game, but at the moment he just kind of seems like a wanderer. Like, he's staying with like a local family. He's a he wants to become an artist, and you can make choices as to what he wants to become, and that gives you different bits of knowledge and different buffs and stuff like that. But for the most part, he seems to be someone who's trying to find himself and is kind of absorbing as much culture as he can as he's trying to learn who he is.
Exactly. So he is he's an artist that is abroad. He has family at home. I'm blanking on where his home is. And when he returns, he will be a master artist, which is a title, you know, like an apprentice to a master, like the Jedi Council, you know. Mm-hmm. Yes. So when he returns, he'll be a master artist. And because he will have that title, he can open his own business. And when he gets home, he also has a wife waiting for him, an arranged marriage. So
that's correct.
He has, yeah. You said that he's sort of out here also finding himself. That is painfully true. As we play through the game, we learn that although we do get to do a lot of role playing and decide, you know, do we want to be very interested in the occult and language, or do we want to be interested in law and kind of a jackass to everyone? You get those choices, but at the end of the day, Andreas is a character. He is not just a cipher for the player. And once you start to learn more about why he's hesitant to return home, it turns into this journey of a broken man trying to figure his life out as well. It's really moving.
No, and I can see that even happening just now. So I'm not super far into the story, and the first day was fairly uneventful. Nothing kind of major happened. There was that dinner that you spoke about, and I've been kind of playing Andreas as this. I was very, very protective of brother Piero, who ends up actually being accused of the murder, because he's basically like just this older monk who's just getting shit left, right, and center. People are just constantly like picking on him, and you're working too slow, your work isn't of a high enough quality, and he's just like, I don't care, I've lived a good life, like I'm ready whenever the Lord wants to come and take me. And so I ended up kind of playing Andreas, like standing up for this guy and just being like, hey, like, leave him the fuck alone, like he's out here doing his best, he's committed himself to God, and that's what this is supposed to be all about. Like, just let him do his thing.
You know, being mean to Piero in this game is akin to being mean to Kim in Disco Elysium. You just don't do it.
Exactly. No, you. The game doesn't do anything to kind of spur it on, but there was something that awoke in me, and it's just like, I need to defend Piero, like, from everything. He needs to be, like, guarded from everything that's being thrown at him. And you referenced the Martin Luther stuff. Now, I don't fully understand the ins and outs of it, but as far as I understand, the Martin Luther texts were something that came out that was essentially criticizing of the church and the way that they essentially were doing business.
Yeah, publicly.
Kind of profiting off of people.
Yeah, very publicly criticizing the church. For how they were, it's like you just said,
in a time when you don't as well, like you didn't criticize the church. That's the key thing.
Yeah, we could publicly criticize the church today and nobody really bats an eye, but back then it was extremely taboo.
It was sacrilege, wasn't it? I mean, it was, you know, he was exiled for that kind of stuff. And so I ended up actually not necessarily supporting the Baron, but kind of poking the bear a little bit, because Father Abbott gets like a bit annoyed and he's like, oh, we shouldn't be discussing this. And I'm like, well, what's wrong with a little bit of conversation? You know, there's nothing wrong with openly discussing, you know, because I went for this very like scholarly Andreas. So he was very sort of knowledgeable about the workings of the church and a kind of religious hierarchy, as well as like being very in tune with nature. So I was kind of like, you know, what's wrong with a spirited conversation? I made him a logical thinker. So it was interesting to kind of poke the bear. And I ended up actually getting banned from the Abbey. I don't know if that's something that's set in stone in the game, but
It's not really a spoiler to say you come back during Act Two. Andreas does.
Mm-hmm.
And they address it. Like, if you got banned the first time, they'll address it when you come back. And it's a lot of little moving pieces, but the track of the game is relatively set.
And so the point I'm at the moment is the Baron has been killed, and it's a full-on, like, knives out whodunit Agatha Christie murder. He's found in the middle of this part of the Abbey, and Brother Piero's there, and he's the one who's found the Baron. One of the sisters, one of the nuns, she screams, and Father Abbot accuses Brother Piero of killing the Baron. And I'm assuming that this is kind of one of the set pieces, because it kind of paves the one of the suspects, like you were saying, is that the Baron decides that he wants our character to finish doing the illustrations for a book that he commissioned, and to take Brother Piero off of that book. And Brother Piero was very nonchalant. He didn't particularly care, but Father Abbot uses that to accuse Brother Piero basically of the crime, because he had the knife in his hand, he was covered in blood. And so Brother Piero ends up being arrested. And so the point I'm at the moment is I've got a couple of leads. Mother Cecilia is apparently a very knowledgeable lady. She seems to know some stuff, so I'm going to go talk to her at some point. But that's where I am. So I'm at the very, very beginning of that murder mystery section. And I have to be perfectly honest with you, I am fucking hooked at the moment.
I am so glad
I'm
to
really,
hear that.
Really hooked. I really am. I'm about, I want to say about 2.5 hours in, maybe, sort of around that mark. And there's just so much there. And do you know what it is that's hooking me? Is this not even the big set pieces, right? Like, if I'm perfectly honest, it's not even the murder of the Baron. It's the little things, like, so I went and you can choose who you have a meal with.
Yes.
And I went and had a meal with one of the characters called Otto, and older Otto, who is his dad. And Otto is a Christian man, but he likes to bitch about the church and how the church is acting, and kind of you get a lot of information from him and his dad about the Baron. And he, you know, apparently, like you were saying, he beats somebody up, he likes to sleep around. So I was like, oh, okay. And I'm assuming you can get different bits of information depending on what you do with your time. Very sort of akin to like Disco Elysium, where it's like you have a set period of time and what you do defines what you find out.
Yes, I am really glad you brought up the meals. I don't remember all of the stages of the Divine Office, which are the hours of the day that you pray, that monks would pray at the church. But Vespers, I believe, is the dinner time. I don't remember. Maybe Nones is like lunch, but you're going to be eating multiple times a day. And one of the things, Ben, that I look for in video games, one of the things that drives me wild in a positive way, is world building. I want to be in a world, and I want to feel as if that world lives without me. If I weren't there, that world is going to keep existing. And by having lunch with or dinner with any number of people, so many people, multiple times a day across this whole game, you are learning so much about these people's lives and the worlds around them and the gossip of the town. Your playthroughs and perception can completely change depending on who you decide to break bread with. And I love that.
Yeah, and I mean, like, to just to go off the back of that, so when the investigation time begins, the very, very first thing I did was I went and attended the autopsy. One of the other brothers is he's performing an autopsy of the Baron. And he basically says, he's like, look, we all know Brother Piero didn't do this, you know, not being horrible, this guy's in his 70s, he's not got it in him to murder somebody. However, Father Abbot really has a stick up his ass, and so if you want to help, I'll let you be there when I look at the body, and then you can kind of go off and try and gather the evidence. So I was really worried about it being time sensitive, so that was the first thing I went and did. And that kind of spurs everything as well. That was when it was like, okay, right, there's a head injury, so now definitely it can't be Brother Piero, because Brother Piero doesn't have the physical energy and the physical capacity to hit somebody over the head with something enough to cause blunt force trauma. But then day two, instead of, now I'm allowed back in the Abbey, instead of heading back to the Abbey, I actually went and hung out with the women of the town. So the women of the town, they do this thing, I think it's like once a year, where after they've sheared the sheep, they then have to spin the wool in order to be able to sell the wool. And it's essentially just like a little gossip session where like you sit and listen to these women just gossip, but you find out so much information, so much world building about the town, and you can ask them like, why is the Abbey raising their taxes? And you find out about, you know, not only are the church raising their taxes, but then the man who they have to pay to mill the flour, he's raised his price, and they're like, well, we're not raising our prices, so we're just getting more and more out of pocket. And so you start to see a lot of resentment from the townspeople towards certain characters and getting that backstory, like you said.
Yeah, it's really great. You're not going to be able to meet with everybody and have lunch with everybody and do everything on just one playthrough either. So it does kind of incentivize multiple playthroughs if you wish, but your experience won't be incomplete. You know, if you don't mm-hmm. go to the autopsy, for example, I think his brother Washlav or something. He's the one with the huge chest and an eye patch that makes him look like he'll kick your ass.
Yes.
Yeah. If you don't go to the autopsy, he sends you a letter and he just says, hey, like, sorry, I missed you, but here's what I found. So.
Oh, okay. Interesting. So you still get it either way.
Yeah. Yeah. There are some fail safes built in. You know, if you don't go to the, if you don't spin wool with the ladies, you don't get a lot of that gossip, but you know, there's enough to be found throughout all of the town that you're going to be approaching the final days of the investigation with more questions than answers, right? It's very difficult to pin down a specific target, a whodunit, for example. And that's all I'm going to say. Since you haven't finished the first act, that's all I'm going to say. I think you're going to like how it ends.
I'm very curious to see, because at the minute it's really got me hooked, because it is very like, you know, Mother Cecilia, she's like the head, I don't know if like you call it the head nun, but she's like the mother figure of this entire abbey. And everyone in town is like, she knows some stuff. Like, there is bits that she knows that she's not telling people, because she's got to keep that information to herself, because in this time period, you know, women are very supposed to be very reserved, and they're very like seen and not heard and all of that other bollocks that came with the time. So it's interesting to know that in being seen and not heard, like, these women of the town absorb so much information that like the men wouldn't think to go and question them, because it's like, oh, they're just the women, they're just the gossips. But in reality, they know all of the shady under secrets. They know about like the Baron and the fire. They know about everything that's happening in the church. They're like, go and talk to Mother Cecilia. So it's really interesting to see that being played out that way. Yeah, I don't want to say too much more, because I'm kind of at the cusp of just beginning to kind of sink my teeth into the investigation of the first murder. I know there are more. I know there are more. And so I'm interested to see that. To wrap it up, if you had to sell this to people, what would you do? Like, if you had to give like a really short synopsis of like your time of the game and why people should play it, what would you say?
That is so tough, because this is the kind of game that, you know, you could recommend it to somebody and they're either going to be like you and I and adore it, or they're gonna say, all you're doing is walking and reading, like, this sucks. You know, this isn't...
Oh, yeah, you have to like reading. Yeah. Oh, I do have to talk about one thing really quickly. Sorry to cut you off.
No.
I forgot about the glossary. This thing has been a fucking lifesave. So when people are talking, random things will get underlined in red. And for the longest time, I was like, this is weird, because everything is very like handwritten. And when you begin, you can choose if you want different fonts, because different fonts kind of go with different characters. And it's kind of like the game's way of portraying their voice and how they sound. Mm. Some of them are very sort of cursive and swervy, and others are very like gothic and heavy. And you can just tell, like the Father Abbott, in my head, he sounds like the fucking guy from Hunchback of Notre Dame, you know, like the main priest.
Yeah.
That's what he sounds
like. It's not just their voice. Pay attention to the different typefaces of the different class systems. All of the brothers who have money, like the church members who have money to live off of, versus the peasants that barely make enough to pay rent and taxes. Their iconography is completely different. And sometimes Andreas's own handwriting will change depending on how he perceives the person he's talking to. There is a built-in classism to all of this.
Yes. And I've had, even in my short time, I've had that random townsfolk person that I was talking to about, they had the pagan story and I knew the church's story of the saint. In talking to him, his like font, his iconography changed and become a lot softer looking as we kind of started to have this like mutual thing to talk about. And Andreas became, he was never standoffish, but there was like a connection being formed, and you saw the iconography change. I had to bring that up randomly while I remembered, because not only does it show you pictures of who people are, so like when it says Brother Piero, you can press it and it will show you a picture of Brother Piero, but it also does things like there's a lot of references to like legitimate historical documents. I can't remember the book that the Baron is gonna, it's like the history historica testi something,
Historia Tassing, it's the history of Tassing, which is the name of the town. That a very contentious book that some people do not want to see the light of day.
So if that was to come up while you're playing Xbox, I mean, I don't know if you played, I'm assuming you, oh, you said you played on Steam Deck, but I'm sure there's a button for it. But on the Xbox, you press that little, was it the magnifier or whatever they call it, the two boxes, and that will bring up the glossary, and then that will show you like, oh, this book released in the 15th century was extremely criticizing of the church, and that's how you learn about all of these different things in the world. So,
and it's not just, it's the, really in, oh, I'm so sorry, Ben. Oh,
no, no, go,
it's
go,
not
go.
Just the fictionalized stuff like the Historia Tassing. You'll see Martin Luther will be underlined and you can open it up to learn more about him.
Mm-hmm.
The Spanish Inquisition will be underlined. You open it up and it says nobody ever expected it. Got to get that joke in there. But it's real life things too. It's not just the, you know, the fiction.
But it's a really interesting way of having Andreas and the player kind of learn about these things, right? Because rather than just a character being like, oh, well, the Historia Tessin, you know, was this book, blah, blah, like a character saying it, you just kind of pop out of the page a little bit and you sort of zoom out of the picture in the book and you can read this little sort of two or three sentences and you're like, oh, okay, that's what that is. And then you go back.
Yeah, it's kind of like somebody taking notes in the margins, like in real time.
It is very much like that, yes. But I apologize for digressing the conversation, but it was just, I'd forgot to talk about it. And I was like, if I don't talk about it now, I'm going to forget. And it's such a big part of the game. And it's something that I really, really like about it. So I apologize for cutting you off.
No, not at all. I'm happy to talk about this game forever. As for who I might recommend this to, and how I might go about doing it, I would say this is a murder mystery on its face that ties passionate appreciation and respect for history that has been deeply researched with questions such as, how does the progression of time dictate our history? If any of that interests you, it is worth your time to give this a try. Consequently, if you hear that and say, well, gee, I don't know, if you have respect for Josh Sawyer and Obsidian, and you just like the work that they've done. Didn't they also do Pillars of Eternity? Is that the one?
I believe so. Let me just fact check you while you continue talking.
Something like that, or Fallout New Vegas. If you like their work, this is, I mean, this is them operating at 100% efficiency. It is a love letter to this time period. It is something that they directly are interested in, so it's not like an assignment to them. This is a passion project. If any of that sounds interesting to you, guess what? It's on Game Pass. You can try it for no extra dollars out of your pocket if you want to.
Mm-hmm. You was correct. Pillars of Eternity, yes.
Okay.
I just, what he said, you know, the the game is very, you have to be willing to read. There is a lot of dialogue, and there isn't an awful lot of voice acting outside of a couple of sort of character sounds here and there. So you do have to be prepared to read. If you're into narrative heavy stuff, do you know the moment I knew I was in for a good time is when I clicked an option and it said, this will be remembered. And I was like, okay, fuck, yes, I'm in for a good time now. If you're into those kind of games, anything like Rick said, you know, like New Vegas, any kind of narrative heavy multiple choice game, hell, even Disco, if you was into Disco Elysium, this game is like right up your street.
Night in the Woods is another one. If you like Night in the Woods, this is another qualified rec.
Yeah, it's one of those games that is not going to appeal to the masses, but the people that love it are going to fucking love it. And if you like the premise, but you're like, I'm not into that kind of like narrative heavy read, that's fine. That's okay. Because you know what I think this would make? And I say this because I can imagine my partner Ellie doing this. This would be an amazing backseat gamer game. Like if you was doing something else while someone was just like reading, they're like, oh my God, like, you know, the Baron got into a fight with someone and now I can explore that. You'd be like, oh. I think it'd be one of those good games to kind of like overhear what's happening if you don't want to be fully immersed in it.
I wonder if people that like Downton Abbey would like this. I've never watched that show, but like, I know it's a historical drama, you know?
I don't know, maybe. I don't know if is this game drama enough? I'll find out, I guess. but talking about people who love a game and are going to absolutely love the game, let's move on to the elephant in the room that I've been trying to put off for a long, long time. The game I recommended to you, Rick, was Super Mario RPG.
Oh, yeah.
So, Super Mario RPG, originally released in 1996, but was then again released as a remaster this year, was a SNES game, which was a joint venture between Nintendo and Square. And, God, how do you describe this game? This game consists of Mario essentially trying to protect the Mushroom Kingdom from Smithy, I believe his name is. And there are multiple pieces of stars that you have to go and collect in order to become powerful enough to get your way to Bowser's castle and defeat the final boss. It's Mario, and it's an RPG. There's not much more to say. Help me out here, Rick.
I was really thrilled whenever you asked me to do this one, because I had the remake and I've been, you know, I've been wanting to play it, just didn't like, I was like, I don't know if I wanted to devote the time to it. And then you mentioned it and I was like, yes, finally an excuse. And I'm so happy you did, man. This game is a delight. It is an absolute joy to play. It is it's an RPG that doesn't take itself too seriously in the mechanics, in the presentation, in the dialogue. None of it. It is, I don't want to call it pure candy because that's a little bit reductive, but man, it is a breath of fresh air. It's so fun.
Wow, this is going to be so interesting. Okay, so let's talk about your history with the game. What's your history with Super Mario RPG? I'm just going to call it that. The official name is Super Mario RPG Legend of the Seven Stars. But I believe when they remade it, they just called it Super Mario RPG. So what is your history with this game?
Surprisingly slim. I mean, JRPGs have always been my genre. Like, I love JRPGs. And this one...
But you've never played Super Mario.
Well, no. So my first console growing up was the Sega Saturn, which was already after the SNES. And then after that, I moved on to the PlayStation, and it was kind of history from there. I got into retro collecting last year. But I don't really collect for the Super Nintendo, and Super Mario RPG, it's always been one. Everybody's like, yeah, you know, you really should play it. It's not that long. You know, Yoko Shimomura is the composer, so you've got amazing music. I was like, yeah, I don't know. It's a Mario game. Like, and when you asked me to play it, that was the first time I tried it. I tried the remake first because everybody I talked to that has played both said it's a one-to-one. It's as close to a one-to-one as you can get. So they were like, you know, don't feel bad about starting with the remake. So I did. I played a little bit of the original working up to this episode today just to compare and contrast the two. And I mean, I'll be honest, I haven't beaten it yet. I'm only a couple hours in, but that's my entire history. It's my history is owed to you, Ben.
So my history is nowhere near as glamorous. I mean, anyone who's listened to the podcast for a long time, or maybe has listened to that specific series, this is kind of like infamous in the Play Along podcast cinematic universe as like the one game that we all absolutely hated, much to the disbelief of everyone.
What?
I despise this game. I'm sorry.
Wow.
I really, really do. So we played it for the first time. I may be wrong. I believe it was 2022. I'm pretty sure it was last year. And it was Jared's pick. And I knew nothing of this game. None whatsoever. Like, I'd never even heard of this game. My first console, I had a Mega Drive for a little while. And then I went on to the PS1, and being a child, I was like, I've got these nice, you know, polygonal 3D graphics. I don't want stupid little baby Mario game. So I never got into the SNES or anything like that. I never went backwards. And my first exposure was this game. Was playing it in 2022. I hated every second of it. And it was a emotionally and physically painful experience for me.
Physically?
Oh, bro, this game gave me headaches. Absolute headaches.
I'm thinking, like, when you said physically painful, I'm thinking back to the battles. I'm like, man, the timed hits aren't that difficult, are they?
I will say, this is one of the examples, and, you know, we said it, I think I said it when we was talking about our final thoughts when we done the last episode. This game walks a Paper Mario can run, and I respect it for that. I will say that. I respect it for what it paved, and also, like, what it paved for, like, Mario as a whole. Like, Mario started to become a lot goofier after Super Mario RPG and kind of started to mess about with, like, putting him in a cat suit and all these other different, like, things that we've got nowadays. But I just, mate, especially the Smithy fight, I know you've not got to it yet, but the Smithy fight at the end, they may have changed it in the remake, but in the original, it's just a boss rush. You fight every single boss throughout the game leading up to the final Smithy fight, and then you fight Smithy. And it was just very, very painful. What are your thoughts on the story so far? So the story resolves around, and correct me if I'm wrong, a giant sword falls from the sky and breaks the, I was going to call it the Rainbow Road. I don't think they called it that. They called it like the Star Road. And basically shatters these seven pieces of stars around the Mushroom Kingdom. And Mario is introduced to Geno. And Geno is basically like, I need to go and collect these pieces and defeat this villain and rebuild the Star Road. That's my understanding. And there are a couple of subplots sprinkled in there. You've got Mallow's subplot, and there's like some stuff with Bowser later on. But for the most part, that is primarily the story of Super Mario RPG.
Yeah, that sounds about right to me. It's not trying to, you know, it's not trying to be like other Square games like Chrono Trigger or, you know, games that would come later like Final Fantasy VII. It's a Mario game at heart.
Yeah, it is. And what I will say is, like, I hope people understand what I'm saying when I say it, but like, there's a very stereotypical 90s Japanese comedy style, right? You watch like your early Dragon Ball anime and stuff like that. There's a very like almost slapstick kind of delivery, and there's a lot of that in Super Mario RPG, which is why the game comes off as like so goofy and kind of like uncaring about how it comes across, because it's very telling of that time period and like the way that the comedy was in Japan in that time period.
You can see it right in the beginning of the game. At the very beginning, you're fighting Bowser on top of these two chandeliers. And when you win the fight, Bowser's chandelier falls, and it falls. He's still suspended in air. Once he realizes he's about to fall, he does the thing where he pretends like he's trying to run, and his eyes have those big anime tears coming out of them before he falls.
Yeah, it's the classic.
So you're not a fan of that style of humor?
I am. It's really, really hard because I don't know why it didn't land with me. Like, you know, like the Bowser thing, I respected that. I was kind of like, oh, that's funny, okay. But Mallow is just a whiny bitch. I just cannot. I can't cope with this fucking guy.
Mallow's a bit much. Yeah, that's true.
And you know, I don't know how far did you get into the story, roughly? Where I know you're a couple of hours, but
I'm going to be totally honest. It's been a minute. Once you asked me to play this, I kind of played a lot. And this past week, we've been doing stuff for our show, and I started a new position at work. I just haven't had the time. I kind of don't remember where I'm at.
Did you get to the Frog Fuchsius or whatever it is with the frog on the Nimbus Cloud?
Not quite, but I have seen him. I've seen gameplay and like pictures and stuff of him.
Okay, so you're in. I'd say you're still like the early legs. So although this game is like, quote unquote, short, it's short by JRPG standards. I think it's still like a good 25 hour slog.
Oh wow, 25.
I'm pretty sure it's 20 something hours. Let me double check.
Oh wow, I thought it was like 12.
It may be. I may be pulling that number out of my ass. when focusing on the main objective, 12. Okay, yeah. It felt like 25 hours. I'll say that. I don't know. It's hard to explain what it is about this game. There are a lot of things about this game that I did enjoy at the time. We spoke about it when it happened. There's a boss fight in here with a guy called Johnny. That's fucking awesome. Like, Johnny's a great character. Johnny should come back. He basically has this like, and it's a very trope thing as well, because like you go down to fight him and he's like, I don't want to fight all of you. I want to fight Mario one-on-one. So then you end up having like this big one-on-one battle with this one guy. You know, Geno's an okay character. Everything just kind of slightly fell flat. In hindsight, maybe part of it is because I kind of went in thinking, oh, this is going to be like an early Final Fantasy, but Mario. And that's very much not the case whatsoever. I don't know if that's kind of tarnished my expectation and so kind of ruined my experience with the game. Because I was like, oh, we're going to get a fucking dark Mario game. Like, this is awesome. And it's the exact opposite.
Yeah, definitely not dark at all. It's full of levity. It doesn't take itself seriously at all. What did you think about the battle system?
I didn't mind it, right? Like, I had not long played or begun playing Paper Mario Origami King, so I was somewhat familiar with the pressing A at the right time in order to, like, get the extra attack and everything like that. I do remember having some bit of a grievance because it wasn't always necessarily clear what the turn order was and who was going to go when. And I remember it changing even in the same battle. So the turn order would change at certain points in the battle, which ended up becoming very hard to kind of work out. Like, okay, well, these three characters all need healing. Am I going to get to... I mean, like, it's no spoiler, you get Peach later in the game, and this kind of sets the tone of Peach being the healer. So it's like, am I going to get to Peach's turn in order to be able to use her to heal the party? Or is there no point trying to do that? And I might as well just go all out attack beforehand. But I don't remember liking the battle system. I remember it chopping and changing a lot and finding it very hard to strategize during the fights.
That's fair. The main thing with the battle system that bugged me was the timed defense hits. Like, I don't mm-hmm. mind timed hits whenever you are attacking yourself. You know, they, from what I understand, they did that later in the Mario RPG games, like Paper Mario and Mario and Luigi. Yep. Similar thing is in Legend of Dragoon. That's fine. Sea of Stars is the newest one that did it. That's fine. But doing it whenever you're getting hit, like, as a defense, ooh, I don't like it.
Yeah, and that's kind of why I was somewhat lucky, because I'd been playing Origami King, I was kind of used to doing that timed defense for, like, Koopa shells and stuff like that. It's really hard to explain. It's not quite a parry. You're not quite doing it just before it hits, but you're also not quite doing it after it hits. You're kind of doing it the exact frame that the pixel meets contact with the character. It's very hard to time. And I remember not ever successfully, like, consecutively being able to block, like, block attacks in this game.
Yeah, I guess the good news, though, like, in terms of the time defense and in terms of the strategizing issues that you mentioned, Ben, the good news is that unless the game takes a difficulty spike later on, it's not really that hard.
It's not really hard. It more just kind of becomes like a resource drain. That's good kind of thing. And it's like, that's something I struggled with, is that the game doesn't necessarily get harder. There's, like, this inflated sense of difficulty. It doesn't get harder, enemies just take more damage to kill them. And I know that's kind of like something among RPGs anyway, but at least, like, for the most part, there's, like, a gimmick to the boss, or there's something that you do, and then, like, there's, like, some thing that changes. But I felt like with Super Mario RPG that it was just kind of like, this is a boss, he's got some different attacks, but he just takes a lot more damage to kill.
That's fair. I don't like that when enemies just become spongier. That's always a bummer.
Yeah, and it's... I know I'm really harking on about the final boss fight, but it really did leave a sour taste in my mouth, because you go through, like, 7 or 8 previous bosses, like these reincarnations of them, and in between each boss fight, you're just like, right, heal, use my mushrooms, use... So then you get to the final boss fight, and you've got, like, next to no resources, and he's just super fucking spongy, and there's 2 phases, and I will be honest, a big issue I had with the battle system of this game is the battle music. That is etched into my brain, and I'm pretty sure we'll be playing in hell when I do eventually die if I end up there.
Is that representative of the full soundtrack to you? Like, do you not like the rest of it?
That's the only part of the soundtrack I remember.
Oh, man.
That and the... I remember the, like, sweeping orchestral music in the cutscene before the menu when Peach is, like, sort of sitting down. I remember that, and I remember that being really, really pleasant. And then it just kind of blends into the... Da, 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 da. And I'm like, okay, right, now it's just ruined. It's ruined again. I can't. And it is annoying because I remember thinking, like, certain bits of this soundtrack are really fucking good. I can't tell you what. I can't hum them. All I can hum you is the battle music of this game.
The remake, the composer is Yoko Shimomura, who is one of the greatest of all time. I mean, Kingdom Hearts is probably what she's known best for nowadays. Parasite Eve is another really great one that she's done. But she was in charge of reorchestrating everything for this remake. So it's her compositions, and she's now retooling them. And the result is, I mean, it's just terrific, soundtrack-wise anyway. It's just amazing. The one that sticks in my head the most is the Beware the Forest Mushrooms. You know, the... You don't remember that one?
Nope.
Oh, man.
No, I'm not going to lie to you, man. Like, I feel like the remake is one of those things, right, where if a friend of mine was like, hey, I've got the remake, do you want to try it? I'd be like, do you know what? I'll try it. Do you know? Like, I want to see what the difference is. I won't lie to you, I'm not going to spend $60 or whatever, like, on this game so that I can just see how it compares. Maybe I'll watch some YouTube playthroughs or something, I don't know. But I'm definitely not in a hurry to buy the remaster.
That's fair. And I mean, especially when Mario Wonder came out too, you know, there are alternatives to scratch that Mario itch. You know what? Speaking of Wonder, more so Super Mario Remake, Super Mario RPG Remake, but with both of them, you know what's cool is that Nintendo is starting to return to form with how they depict their characters. Like, picture Mario in Smash, picture him in Ultimate, picture him in Odyssey. He's like he's slimmer, he's taller, he's more serious. They did it with Pikachu. Pikachu is now skinnier. But with the Super Mario RPG remake, he's just a chubby little guy now. He's just a short, stout little dude. I love it. Bring back fat Mario. Bring back fat Pikachu. Bring it all back, Nintendo. Come on.
I will say, I'm on MarioWiki.com, and I'm looking through some of the changes that have been brought in with this remake. It does sound a lot more promising, I will say. Many of the cutscenes are now pre-rendered videos instead of in-game scenes. So it's got different dynamic camera angles, which I don't know if I necessarily like that, because there was something about having the in-game SNES cutscenes that did kind of add a bit of charm to the game. What else have we got? There's some stuff. Oh, it now auto-saves. That's very nice. This game doesn't... The original doesn't auto-save, which is a big, big thing. I think it said somewhere about, like, the battles. Yeah, so enemy attacks indicate if they cannot be blocked. A exclamation mark graphic indicates when to press the button to perform an action command.
That is technically true, but it's so quick that it almost doesn't matter.
Oh, really?
It's pretty fast, yeah. I still miss it all the time.
Wow, it's now possible to swap party members mid-battle. That was a big thing in the original. That, like, once they went down, if you didn't have a way to down, like, to get them up, that was it.
Yeah, that I'm still not sure if I like that or not. I mean, that's a quality of life improvement that I think most people will enjoy. I don't know. There's something about it that just takes a bit of the challenge away to me, but I'm not going to poo-poo it. I mean, if it's there, I'm sure you don't have to use it if you don't want to, I'm sure. I'll be honest, I haven't had anybody die yet. So
It will come.
Oh, I'm sure it will.
It doesn't look like you can turn it off, which is interesting, because it says if all three current party members are downed, any active members automatically switch in.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I like that or not. That seems like it's just taking away one of the inherent challenges of JRPGs.
See, I would agree with you if I knew what my turn order was and I consistently knew when I was going to get to people, you know. And I'm sure there's an argument can be made, like there's the items that can revive people back, but in my playthrough I leaned on Peach so fucking hard to like heal and revive my team is unreal, which is probably in hindsight part of the reason why I struggled so much. So like if Peach went down I was fucked. So how have you found your time of the game so far? What you have played, how are you finding it?
I mean, like I said, I'm having a terrific time. I really find it to be really delightful. Everything from the animations look really, really nice. They don't go over the top with it, but it's still, the animations are so finely detailed to the point where like Mario's expression will change if he's like, I don't know, running on a log that's spinning across water. And after, like, when you level up, everybody's doing their little dances in the background with the music. That's super cute. I'm having a great time. I'm really having a blast. I will probably end up completing the remake before going back to the original. I don't know. I still feel a little bad about not doing the original first, but everybody told me it's 1-to-1. So, you know.
It doesn't seem 1-to-1. I'm not going to lie to you, man. Like, there's like a new action gauge. So apparently when filled to 100%, a player can use a special ability called a gauge move or a triple move with all three active party members. So it's basically the all-out attack from Persona.
Yeah. Yeah. At the very beginning, all that really amounts to is when it builds up, Mario will call Toad in, and Toad gives you an item of some sort. It's fine.
Is that the chest fin they was talking about?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, there was a mention in there, like chest, like a Toad just randomly appears and opens a chest and you get an item. Like, it sounds like eventually it progresses into like an all-out triple attack. Man, I'm a bit on the fence about this one. I'm not gonna lie to you. Like, if we're talking about the original, don't touch it. Don't touch it with a tempered barge pole. There's no need to play the original. Go and play Paper Mario or something. Don't play the original. I'd be more inclined to recommend the remake, just because it sounds like a lot of the issues that I had with the original have been kind of ironed out in the remake. But it sounds like, for the most part, like visually, orderly, the way the story plays out, it's kept a lot of what people, sounds really horrible to say, what people see of the as the charm of the game, right? Like all of the things that people like, the goofiness, the comedy, that's all still in there. Like, that's not been taken out. So I'd be more inclined to recommend the remake. But yeah, I was really gutted because I really, really wanted to enjoy this. I like Mario. I like JRPGs. This should have been right up my street. I just could not get on with it.
That's fair. I mean, I understand your points of criticism. I don't think they're invalid or anything. You know, it's
just, yeah. Sometimes it be like that, you know. Yeah. Sometimes you think you should like something and you just don't latch onto it for whatever reason.
I totally understand. We just finished up Lost Odyssey and I thought that I would think that game is a 10 out of 10, and it absolutely is not.
Really? Because people hold it, like everyone I hear talk about it is like, oh, it's amazing, you need to play it, it's like the pinnacle of JRPG.
It's really, really good, but I would never call it the pinnacle of JRPGs.
Wow.
It is really good though. But no, like I get what you mean. I think if you're looking for a serious JRPG or a JRPG that has interesting mechanics, this isn't the game for you. If you are looking for something to play in between JRPGs like that, like if you're you just got off of Lost Odyssey and you're planning to go to Persona 3 Reloaded next, you know, Mario can be a palate cleanser, you know?
I will say, when I played this, I was emulating it on my PC. If I could play this on my Switch, handheld, like in between, kind of like, oh, I'm on my lunch break, let me just play a little bit. Or like, oh, I'm doing something else, let me play a little bit. Maybe I would have enjoyed it more.
When you
being kind of stuck to my PC screen for like 2 or 3 hours at a time playing this game really did not help here.
When you emulated it, did you do any sort of like CRT shaders to make it look more accurate to playing on a television?
I tried. I couldn't get them to look the way I wanted them to. It just kind of it looked wrong. I don't know how to explain it. I was just like, no, this doesn't look right. So I just turned them off.
I wonder about that too. My CRT is like 13 inches. It's a very small one. And I can imagine this looking really good on original hardware in that situation. Emulating it like on my modern PC, just straight out of the box, you know, I think it might look a little funky.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense.
But no, I enjoyed this. I enjoyed this a lot. I'm not going to lie. I thought you recommended it because you loved it. I haven't tuned into your Super Mario RPG coverage on the show just yet. But I guess now I know what I'm in for when I do get to it.
Yeah. Well, this is kind of the reason why it became really famous, is because Keith of MainQuest was like, "Yo, you need to play this game." And was like, "Okay." And then all we did was shit on it for about 9 weeks.
Oh man, 9 weeks too.
Yeah, it was, a lot of people got jaded, and understandably, because we really laid into this game. We did lay on thick, but I feel like now I'm not in the midst of it. I've had some time to kind of, you know, reflect. I've took a step back. A lot of the points I made, I still hold true, but I'm definitely not shitting on this game as much as I was during our series. I'll say that.
That's fair. That's fair. So would you recommend this? Who would you recommend this to? Would you recommend this? I guess.
Would I recommend this? I feel like I am a lot more inclined to recommend the remake on the Switch. You know, I mean, if you're like me, like I jailbroke my 3DS, so like I could emulate the NES, like the SNES file on the 3DS. I feel like it lends itself much more to a handheld audience, as opposed to like we were saying, like I was playing on like, I got like the TV behind me, I was just like playing in the den, playing on my PC. It didn't feel right, but the ability to like tap in and out as you kind of want to, and especially with the Switch having like, you know, the just pressing the power button to put it in standby, just little bits like that would kind of add to the game not feeling as great in as it did when I played it. Who would I recommend it for? Ironically enough, I feel like those who grew up playing the original should just leave it with the rose-tinted glasses. Like, I feel like coming back to it, it's not going to be what you remember, and I'd be worried that it kind of tarnish your experience of it, because I just don't think it holds up anywhere near as much as people remember it. If you're looking for a goofy JRPG that you can dip in and out of, then 100%, I feel like Super Mario RPG, especially the remake, is for you. If you're looking for a hardcore sink your teeth and sink your hours into JRPG experience, then this isn't the one, I don't think.
Yeah, I think I would agree with all of that. Maybe not the part about leaving the original behind, but otherwise I agree totally. folks that are new to JRPGs or want to get into the genre, they might like this. It's very approachable. It does not overwhelm you with anything. I will say, if you want to play the original, the last I checked, the cart is like $90, so it's not a cheap game anymore.
Oh no, so that's something. Especially like post-pandemic retro boom, everything just went up.
Yeah, and God help you if you want it CIB. CIB SNES games are, they can get crazy. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's readily available these days on Switch. I mean, it's never going to go on sale because it's Nintendo, so you're going to be paying that $60 no matter what.
Those who are new to JRPGs is a very good audience, I think. I think that is a very, like, because it kind of, it is enough of a time commitment, do you know what I mean? Like, in terms of, like, the RPG side of stuff, but also it has enough of the DNA of a JRPG to kind of give people an expectation. Like, I would say this is a better, like, first JRPG than, like, Persona 5 or fucking Octopath Traveler or something like that. Like, this is like, baby's first JRPG, and that's a good starting point.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Or if you've only ever played Pokemon before, like, that's technically a JRPG. This is a nice next step, you know?
It is. I always forget that Pokemon is technically a JRPG. I always think of it as this, like, its own entity and its own, like, genre. Like, it's just, it's Pokemon. But no, it is technically a JRPG.
For better or for worse, yeah.
Okay, well, before we sign off, Rick, why don't you just remind people where they can find Pixel Project, what it is that you do, and just give them the rundown.
Absolutely. Once again, I am the host of Pixel Project Radio. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts. We are also on Instagram, Twitter, and Blue Sky, and Discord as well. If you want a recommendation for a first episode, check out maybe the Uematsu episode, the music of Uematsu. And if you don't want to do that, Night in the Woods is a good first step. Good episodes. Had a lot of fun doing them. And yeah, I'm trying to remember. I don't think we've had any of the Play Along crew on our show yet. Otherwise, I would recommend those episodes. Jared and I started doing something, but it just didn't work out schedule wise, unfortunately. But when you folks all come on, I'm really hoping it for it. When, not if, you know, I'll proudly promote those because I'm sure they're going to be great.
Well, I hope so. And I mean, if you've heard this and you want more Rick, not only have you got Pixel Project, but you've got that Shadow of the Colossus episode. I feel like there was a lot of good conversations to come out about that because, from what I remember, me and Rick were kind of very defending of the game, and Jared and Kai didn't particularly. You didn't like it?
No, I wasn't a fan when we recorded.
That was it. Oh, yes.
That's why I'm hesitant to recommend it, because people are going to get mad at me.
No, it's okay. I remember now. Yeah.
What I will say is this. I am more than willing to give that game another shot, and I want to once it's kind of left my memory, because I think there's something there that I just didn't catch the first time. I'm willing to do it again.
That's where I'm getting myself confused, yes. But it was a good episode nonetheless. So if you want to go check that out, you have that as well. But Rick has got more than enough episodes to keep you occupied, and some of them are plenty enough in length that you will be able to make your way through them over a good period of time.
Yeah, nothing quite the span of 9 weeks, but, you know, we do our best.
I mean, you guys are testing the waters with this Lost Odyssey series. So that being said, I want to say thank you for joining me, Rick. It's been absolutely awesome to chat to you. And honestly, thank you for recommending Pentiment and actually getting me to download and install this game and play it.
Yeah, dude, I am more than happy to talk all things Pentiment as you go through it. And thank you again for inviting me. Like I said, I interact with Jared fairly frequently in the Discords. Maybe not so much you just because of the time zone difference, but I always love talking to you. I love talking to Kai too. I would be more than happy to come back anytime. I'd be so lucky to be asked. So thank you again, Ben. This has been great.
No, dude, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you guys for listening. Hopefully you've enjoyed the episode, and we will see you next time. Bye.